Well, hi everybody, and welcome. I think this is our fourth session of the Dissipation of Glamour initiative. I know there are a number of these that are operating in the world as people form their own groups to deal with this world problem. This latest version of it is Impulse by Olivia Hanson, Tuya Robbins, and myself. And we'll try over the months and hopefully over the years to study the book Glamour World Problem and to apply this wonderful teaching to ourselves also in the question of the conquest of illusion. I have my big white rabbit headphones on here today. My other ones, which are a little more discreet, are giving too much static. So I know it looks strange, but here we go. Now, we've been reading in this section that talked about the technique of light. Let's see, how does it go up here? I'm going to the technique using the intuition, using the mind, and then using the dissipation or dispersal of Maya. So we did our reading last time. I just have to find this. Gosh, it's rather a long text, isn't it? So it's the technique of the presence, the technique of light, and then the technique of indifference for the dispersal of Maya. Now, I made a decision here not to deal with the technique of of the presence, because we're mostly dealing with the technique of light at this time. Now, that's not exactly the order in which DK presents things. He always, as is the occult method, works from above to below, but I thought we might be better off working at first with the technique of light, which is what we're attempting to apply first with respect to our individual glamours, and then soon, applying this not only to the individual glamours but to the world glamours in a very glamoured world situation. And it really is a danger, so we have to do what we can do to help dissipate that glamour. So what we'll first is to have a little bit of reading in the technique of light, and if this is correct, we have 51 pages in this particular technique, so it's going to take us quite a while to work our way through it. And then by that time we may be ready to deal with the intuition and the technique of the presence, where the spiritual triad, the buddhi, and really in a certain sense the monad are all involved. But we'll start with that, which is much more practical and immediate in our own condition. And then we will have a chance to have some questions, perhaps, and some shared thoughts, and then we'll get into our meditation. Let's just see how we're doing here, who all we have here with us. There's about 45 of us, I think, gathered here, and that's good. That's very good. All right, here we go. This is the Tibetan speaking on page 190. And some of this you may find familiar, and other aspects not so much. We come now to the consideration of the next development and service to be rendered through the medium of another technique. Okay, we've moved on from the technique of the angel of the presence within our, well, actually the angel of the presence is interesting because it's a combination sort of the monad in the egoic lotus and the influence of the solar angel in the egoic lotus. It's kind of really all of us, we are the monad, whatever we think we are as a personality, as the soul, whatever, as a spiritual triad, it's all the one spirit in different stages of consciousness. But we call a purer and less obstructed stage of consciousness, we call this the monad. But really, even when we're in our normal personality consciousness, it is a pure being at a certain level of immersion in matter. It is the monad. So this theme is so vast, he says, and so much literature to be found in all the world's scriptures, commentaries, and theological dissertations on the subject light of light, that the simple truth and a few basic principles are lost in a welter of words. In my various books, I have given much anent this subject, and in the book The Light of the Soul, and I hope we all have that, you know, the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, as translated by the Tibetan and commented on by Alice Bailey. In my book, The Light of the Soul, which I wrote in collaboration with AAB, an effort was made to indicate the nature of the light of the soul. Light is that which reveals, we have to understand, you know. It is an energy which brings into cognizance or recognition that which was hitherto hidden from consciousness. The key to this technique is to be found in the words, in that light we shall see light, and note the capitalization that the Tibetan offers here. And a simple paraphrase of these apparently abstract and symbolic words could be given as follows. When the disciple has found that lighted center within himself and can walk in its radiating light. Now, you know, this is the influence of the soul within the ethers of the head and within the personality in a more general sense, and can walk in its radiating light. He is then in a position, or in a state of consciousness, if you prefer, wherein he becomes aware of the light within all forms and atoms. Now, light is substance, and there is a philosophy which tells us that the entire universe is simply a precipitation of light, that light really is matter. And when there is no light, there is no matter. So the very first coming forth out of obscurity, out of darkness, out of the darkness of pure being, is the appearance of light, the appearance of matter. Okay, so he becomes aware of light within all forms and atoms. And I think we'll have more and more of that as we begin to see etherically and to see the true light value of any form in the dense physical world. We're dealing to a great extent with dark light, a type of confined non-radiatory light. But within that is the sponsor of it all, which is the true inner light, which we begin to detect with our spiritual practices. The inner world of reality, you know, like almost anything other than the dense physical plane, stands visible to him as light substance. Now, you know, there's matter and there's substance, that which stands beneath it, so to speak. And our first level of substance is etheric, and then it goes on from there. But usually the dense physical forms are not considered so much substance, although we oftentimes use those words indiscriminately. It's more matter than substance. Okay, but in another way, any of the planes and subplanes of the cosmic physical plane can be called matter. Only some of them are substantial to others. They stand beneath the others. So the inner world of reality stands visible to him as light substance, a different thing to the reality revealed by the intuition, you know, from the spiritual triadal level. And we're not here so much talking about what's found in the cosmic ethers of, you know, of buddhi and atma and monadic level and logoic level. We're talking about the light substance of the personality. A different thing, the buddhi reveals a more interior type of beingness than does simply the revelation of the light. He can then become an efficient co-operator with the plan, because the world of psychic meaning becomes real to him. Now, psychic can also be a term applied to the soul, and he knows what should be done to dispel glamour. The true psyche is not what is found on our normal psychological levels. The true psyche is the world of the soul. It's the world of sensitivity, the world of consciousness. It's a higher thing altogether than the lower 18 subplanes. So he can begin to become an efficient cooperator with the plan. Now, the plan takes place, you know, on the atmic levels here. This is where the hierarchy configures the plan as it comes down from the realm of purpose, which is monadic and logoic. These are the true esoteric planes. It's always a Brahmic five, which are considered to be exoteric from the higher occult point of view, and an esoteric two, which are the monadic and logoic levels. And the plan is the best sort of formulation of the purposes hierarchy is capable of in time and space at this point. Okay, let's see where we are here. The psychic meaning, you see, that's very interesting, because the world of meaning is the world of the soul, right? The world of meaning becomes real to him, the world of the soul, and he knows what should be done to dispel glamour. Remember, what it is that's dispelling glamour when we're working together is the light of substance in the higher than the dense physical. There's the light of mind, the mental light, and then there's the light of the soul, the higher mental light, and these three together are the dispelling the glamour and creating that sort of imaginative searchlight, which is probably quite real in an esoteric sense, to help us dispel the glamour. It might be stated that this process of bringing light into dark places falls naturally into three stages. Now, let's just see, you know, we're all, you know, people who are found on the sixth ray and the second ray are particularly adept at the dispelling, or let's just say the dissipation of glamour. And it's very interesting that the words of power connected with these rays, the sixth ray word of power, when you're building the Adhikarana, the highest light controls, right? The highest light controls. What is that? Monadic light. And then for the second ray, it is, I see the greatest light. So in both of these words of power, the idea of light is strongly presented. Then if you happen to have the fifth ray, or very strong influence of the planet Venus conveying the solar angel, it's also a good sign for working with the dissipation of glamour. Now, I think what I'll do is read these next three, and then we'll pause a little bit for any kinds of comments or questions that may be occurring to you. It's going to take us a while. It's going to take us a while. excuse me, to work through this very deep stuff. DK gave this material over, let's say, 5 or 6 years or so, to a group of people, a group of 9 people. Some of their, you know, the personnel might change here and there, but he always kept it at 9. So it's really kind of like 5 or 6 years worth of lessons and writing. So obviously we have a lot to deal with. Okay, so now we're talking about these three stages. The process of bringing light into dark places falls naturally into three stages. Now, many of us are used to the idea, a lot of us are on the second ray in one way or another, and we're used to being light bearers, as it's called, carriers of the light to other people who may be in a darker place. You know the old saying, we revolve upon the pedestal of light, and the 7 points of light stream forth into the darkened area, and lo, the face of those upon the darkened way is not so dark. You know, that wonderful section from the old commentary where it talks about the light bearers. Okay, so here are the three stages. Then we'll pause and see if you have any thought. Just make notes as we go along. Any thought about what you'd like to ask about or comment about or so forth. Here's the first stage, the stage wherein the beginner and the aspirant endeavor to eradicate glamour out of their own life by using the light of the mind, you know? It's a glamour is a largely emotional condition, or it certainly involves the emotions a great deal, and we have to learn how to think objectively and clearly about what's happening in a somewhat detached manner, as the fifth ray allows us to do, and we apply the mind. The light of knowledge, even that simple thing, knowledge, is a major dispelling agent in the earlier phases of the task, or he might have said dissipating. The word dispelling is often used focally with illusion. But anyway, a major dispelling agent in the early phases of the task, and effectively eliminates the various glamours which veil the truth from the aspirant. I mean, so many people are just spouting off stuff which just isn't true. You know, and when we look into our political field all over the world, we see this going on. You tell the people what they want to hear. It may not be true at all. So just what we call the fact check. Now, there are a lot of in the press and all that, there are these fact checkers. And they make sure, are you telling the truth? You know, and the interesting thing is that the old saying of the church is that the devil or something like that is the father of lies. So the facts take care of whether the thing is true or not true, whether it's a lie or not a lie. So knowledge is very, very important. Okay, now the next stage, the stage wherein the aspirant and disciple work with the light of the soul. Now, our meditative techniques help us access a little bit the light of the soul, the light which is streaming forth in the higher mental plane through our egoic lotus via the presence of the solar angel. This is the light of wisdom. Okay, wisdom sometimes can mean buddhi as well, but let's call this the light of wisdom. A certain kind of personal wisdom or transpersonal wisdom. This is the light of wisdom, which is the interpreted result of long experience. You've had a lot of incarnations, you've learned a lot of things, you know, you've been around the block, as it were, and you know what works and doesn't work, what is true, what isn't true, based on your own incarnational experience. Interpreted result of long experience, and this streams forth blending with the light of knowledge. So the light of wisdom from long experience is very useful here, and it blends with the light of knowledge. Now finally, number three, the stage, you know, we continue with the dissipation of glamours, because the glamours are always a little more elusive than we, you know, than they are at first. They get more subtle. The stage wherein the disciple and the initiate, notice how he's added, he's added the word disciple to stage two, and now he's added the word initiate to stage three, and he's eliminated the word aspirant. Notice that progression of words. This is what we're going to hear is not how the aspirant works. The stage wherein the disciple and the initiate work with the light of the intuition. This is the light of what's been called pure reason. It's been called transcendental mind. It's a very high Mercurian type of light, whereas the light of the soul is oftentimes more identified with Venus. This is the stage wherein the disciple and initiate works with the light of the intuition. It is through the blended medium of the light of knowledge, personality, light, you know, generically correlated with the third ray, and the light of wisdom, soul light, with the second ray, that this light, with a capital L, is seen and known and appropriated. This light puts the lesser, puts out the lesser lights through the pure radiance of his power. And there's some of these rules which talk about contacting the higher ethers, and as you do, you're able to blot out form. You're able to blot out the lower revelations and see all things truly as if they were of the same substance, and this you see in this greater light. Okay, friends, so what I'm going to do here is just pause, and I'm going to make these a little smaller. How much smaller can I make them? I don't know. We'll see. So that you can see everything at once. And that might, I guess I, that's quite a bit smaller, isn't it? But maybe you ought to be able to see things more or less. So I'm going to open up the floor here to anyone who would like to either make a comment raising your hand or submit to Brett a question or a statement, something you'd like to say in light of what we have been discussing, and then, you know, I'll we can try to shed a little bit of light on the subject. Okay, it's always something new that you didn't see before. This is what light is all about. All right, so there's our whole paragraph, what we've been reading, and should be before your eyes. Let's see, do you have any thoughts, any questions, anything you would like to explore more deeply or comment upon? Okay. Right. Looking for you. And yeah, I mean light, you know, it's that, you know, the light of the soul. We are basically attempting to live in a higher state of revelation than we presently live in. And we require a higher form of this revelatory energy in order to bring new things into our consciousness. They're not really new. They've been there all the time, but our limitations as human beings have kept us from perceiving them. But once we did perceive them on the way down, so to speak, and then what you say is we recognize them. Recognize. We see them again as if for the first time, only to realize that it's not for the first time and that somehow we have always known what is there. Okay, hold on. We see a couple of... Okay, Sheldon, you go ahead.
Well, just... Yep. A couple of examples, Michael, of stages one and two. And you gave, I think, a lot for stage one. But just asking people, you know, what are the facts of the situation? What do we know about this? So we don't just hear something that creates fear or wild frenzy of excitement. We investigate it a bit further. And yep. When people look at products these days, they'll often go down and take a look at what does Yelp have to say about this? How is it used? So they're... There's some good examples, I think, of this. Well, number two, when I first, most of us, I think, are familiar with the work of Byron Katie, but she, this is a, you know, cognitive psychology is basically what she works from, but she had a beautiful statement recently saying, in effect, what would you be, or who are you without your story?
Uh-huh. Now,
a little subtle, but what it's saying is we make up stories about things, and once we let go of the story and ask the question, is it true? Is it really true? If you reverse this, what would it look like? It's asking those kinds of questions. These are a kind of soul-based questions, which are very, very powerful, I think, to bring us into a greater lighted state.
Mm. Yes, indeed. Thank you, Sheldon. You know, sometimes when I look at number two, I say to myself... Well, people say to themselves, oh, I've been here before. Oh, I know what's happening. See what I mean? And it may not even be that in this life you've done it, but something in you knows. There's a certain, what do you say, let there be no more recollection and yet let memory rule. Mm-hmm. That's in one of the rules. It's either rule two or three, I forget. And there is this memory of having dealt with things. And it comes up and you feel adequate to it because you recognize the circumstances. And a sort of a higher light is thrown without even having to question a whole lot like you do in stage one. You just know. You know something about this based on your experience. At least that's, I'm sure we all have that kind of experience somewhere along the line. Yeah, okay, well, thank you, Sheldon. I've often thought with Byron Katie, she's got a lot of first ray in her mind somewhere. She really does identify things and get right to the point. Thank you, Sheldon. Go ahead, Walter, please.
Yes, this section about the technique of light seems to have three stages of using progressively the mind, the soul, and Buddhic intuition. And it seems like that this is parallel or very similar to the technique of light to dissipate astral glamour using the mind, and the technique of the presence to dispel lower mental illusion using the soul, and then finally the technique of fusion to integrate the dweller on the threshold using intuition. So it seems like that if they're the same thing, here the technique of light can actually, doesn't just go away, but can be applied on higher levels.
There's always higher lights to be applied. Any new energy really manifests on one level as light, because it has to manifest first as vibration, and vibration can break out into light, sound, color, and so forth. So the whole universe is light. You know, if you really look at it, you know, crystallized light, condensed light, you're never going to get rid of the light as long as you have this state of self-objectivity, or self-objectification, we call the universe. So progressive lights are involved, I would say, and we call them by different names. Right, okay, thank you, Walter. Any other thoughts or questions that you have about this? No, not that one can answer all questions, but the group together can think of things and maybe, you know, have some insight. Insight. We, you know, it's so much about sight. It's so much about this third sense, which is synthetic and grasps the relationship of many things together. Not so much one thing at a time. Oh, you hear from a certain direction something. Or you touch something and it's quite localized, you don't touch everything. Later, of course, you will touch everything. It's a higher type of sense. But when the eyes open, we see a lot of things together in their relationships, and this is a more synthetic type of presentation than has been possible before. Okay, anything there that we want to discuss, or we can go on a little bit, you know. We can go on a little bit. I don't want to do, you know, too much. Obviously, it would be nice to be able to continue working in the section and deal with it quickly, but we have other things to do as well. Plus, we have a meditation and so forth. Okay, I'm just looking for you. All right, well, let's just see what the next thing says. Anyway, you know, look, this question of intuition, how do you really access the intuition? There's something called, in early days, I call it, or maybe it's been called, the astral Buddhic leap. Suddenly, in a state of very intensified emotion, the Buddhic plane, which is resonant, you know, the four is resonant to the six, comes through because of a state of high emotional intensity. However, we can't always rely upon that. It's not the most reliable method. So some people think, well, you know, you can't really get to the intuition by the mind. But that's exactly what Master DK teaches, that if you think with sufficient acuity and in broad enough terms and with a necessary degree of abstraction, you know, pratyahara, necessary degree of abstraction, you can attenuate, wear thin, the usual limitations of the mind, and you can make a transition into the transcendental mind. And then you will enter kind of a state of contemplation where subject and object become the same thing and everything begins to fuse. But I'm trying to say that in occultism, we're learning a lot about how to make a reliable approach to the intuition, and the way we do that is via this technique we call the Antikarana, which will lead us not only to the higher mind, it will lead us to transcendental mind, it will lead us to the spiritual will, it will lead us to the sense of pure being, and who knows what else, how we would name it. DK always says there are aspects of divine qualities which we can't even grasp. Matter of fact, you know, here, giving you an idea here. Let me do this. This is a synthetic chart provided by Keith Bailey, and notice that on the higher levels of the intuitional plane, and on the higher levels of the atomic plane, he doesn't even name the cities or the qualities or the faculties or the powers that you might contact, because he says they're beyond the scope of a master of the wisdom. So, you know, what I think is that level number two belongs to the Chohans, and level number one belongs to the Chohans of the seventh degree, sixth and seventh degree. So, you know, we have a long way to go in terms of developing these various faculties, and they are there waiting for us as our Antikarana becomes more and more reliable. Let's see if there's anything to be said here. I don't want to go on too long. You have, therefore, the light of knowledge, the light of wisdom, and the light of the intuition. Now, remember that wisdom is an interesting word. There's personal wisdom or transpersonal wisdom gathered from your own experience. And then there's wisdom which is timeless and ageless and is gathered by impression from the larger hierarch that holds you in solution, namely the planetary logos or the solar logos, whatever. It has not to do with your personal experience at all. It's a wisdom that has to do with the fundamental principles of occultism, which are the laws by which these higher beings operate. They are the will of the higher beings. So there's the light of the transpersonal wisdom, sort of personal wisdom, and then the light of the intuition, which is also called wisdom. But it's a different type of wisdom. It's more like pure reason, and it always is, and it doesn't depend on your own experience. So you have, therefore, the light of knowledge, light of wisdom, light of the intuition, and these are three definite stages or aspects of the one light. You know, sometimes we say the words, I see the greatest light. And this has a lot to do with seeing the light which is unfettered, without chains, without boundaries, pouring forth from Shambhala, the one light, at least in terms of our planetary expression. So they correspond, it says here, to the physical sun. That's the light of knowledge. The heart of the sun, light of wisdom, but also, you know, it does have a relation to the light of intuition. And the central spiritual sun, which is the light of the spirit. Now we have to remember that when you're looking at the spiritual triad, and I'll take a look here, it is an expression of the threefold monad. So the monad in our system is the expression of the central spiritual sun. The monad is our central spiritual sun, and the spiritual triad are extensions of this central spiritual sun. So you can see how the light of intuition coming from buddhi, from the intuitional plane, is an extension of the monad. In this last sentence, you have the clue and key to the relation of man to the logos. Which logos? Planetary logos, solar logos. The spiritual triad is the expression of the monad, which is an aspect of the planetary logos. In other words, there are seven great monadic groups, and there are seven great centers found upon the monadic plane. And every one of us has a monad, along with some of those deva monads, fits into one of those seven big circles. So as a monad, we are part of a sevenfold expression found on the monadic plane, which is the first plane of form, in a way. And also, it is said of us as monads that the monad is that which finds its home within the sun. That's an amazing thought. The monad is that which finds its home within the sun. And, you know, what part of the sun, we can debate that, you know, probably in a way the central spiritual sun. But it is a solar factor as well as a planetary factor. So somehow we're learning something here about our deep, deep spiritual relationship to the planetary logos and to the solar logos. These stages and their corresponding techniques are apt to be misunderstood if the student fails to remember that between them lie no real lines of demarcation, but only a constant overlapping, a cyclic development, and a process of fusion, which is most confusing to beginners. Well, let's just consider ourselves all beginners here, and we're probably correct. I sometimes talk about what I call the elevator of consciousness, you know, and it's fairly fluid. It goes up and down to all the different levels, and it's still the same elevator, it's still the same consciousness, but there are different revelations at the different stages. So he's basically telling us, don't use your concrete mind to divide these things one from another, because they have a lot of interfusion, interpenetration going on. Just as the result of innate reaction to environment produces the apparatus needed to contact the environment, that's a very interesting idea, so the unfoldment of the powers which these techniques serve produces modes of contact with soul and spiritual environments. So, you know, as we use these techniques, we will contact the types of environments which are found on the level to which the technique is correlated. Either personal environment, and there's a whole lot about the personal environment we don't know, you know. The mental plane, the astral plane, still have a lot to learn about it. The soul environment, the higher mind, and then the triadal environment, increasingly, that's the environment in which the masters play their role. So each of these techniques is related to a new environment. Each of them eventually develops power in the initiate or disciple, which can be used in the service of humanity. I pointed to that earlier chart where all the different cities are found, and in higher spheres of divine activity. There's a whole lot of abilities we just haven't developed yet, but until we can get rid of our glamours, there's no hope to develop them. And so many people think they are developing the higher abilities when all they're dealing with is the astral reflection of those higher abilities, and they are deceived and they are deluded. Each is related to the other techniques, okay? You know, that was brought out here by Walter, and each releases the disciple into a conscious relationship with a new environment, new states of awareness, and new fields of service. And I think that's as far as I'm going to go here. You know, next time we talk, we're going to take this up again, and this is, and I'll read the last sentence. So, Dissipation of Glamour Initiative, and this is number 4, I believe it's number 4, and our date today is 1st of July in 16. So, given what we've just read, are there any thoughts you would like to bring forward or any questions that occur to you? There, it's small enough to read, and doggy. I like that. A dog is a sixth-ray animal with a lot of second-ray, and so I think the dog is very suitable as a mascot for our particular group. Okay. Anybody like to say anything here?
Michael?
Yes.
Hi, Olivia? This is Biel.
Oh, Biel. Biel, go ahead.
You have a question from Jan. She says, hello, everyone. A question on the meditation work, Michael. Do you know if we should be sticking with the same quality we are attempting to dissipate every single week? I am tempted to jump to a different glamour, but how do we know when we are finished with the particular glamour we are working with?
Well, you're never going to be finished. You're not going to be finished right away. I won't say never, okay? But, you know, we're doing a bit of experimenting, right? So what seemed to you important a week or two ago, maybe further insight reveals that something else is still more important. For instance, you know, I thought to myself, well, okay, I might deal with the glamour of self-pity, you know, the second-ray type of glamour is fundamental and all that. But then I thought more deeply, you know, what is the root of all of these second-ray glamours and even the root of so many glamours that are on other rays? And I thought, well, it's fear, the glamour of fear due to undue sensitivity. And I thought, well, do I have to stick with the first glamour or shall I go with something that I think is even more fundamental, maybe to my nature and many other people's nature? So I switched. So you can switch, you know, you don't have to, you're in the experimental stage and you might find something that's just right for you, you know, that you feel is really something that has to be worked with, and it doesn't have to be, you don't have to rigidly, religiously stick to your first choice. I wouldn't, if something else prompts itself. Okay. Okay, thank you. And it looks like we have Carl asking a question here, is making a statement. Carl, go ahead.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
I was thinking just what you were talking about as far as fear. And I was thinking a glamour that we all seem to share is a fear of truth. That was a thought that just came to me, a fear of truth. Because truth is life. Revealing, and a lot of times we just want to continue to live in the darkness.
Right. We don't want to be seen. And DK said, you know, to one of his disciples, he said, could you withstand all the psychologizing you submit other people to? You know, he also said that in the group there's going to be revelation. So can you withstand the revelation of the group light. So, okay, you know, there's also something in psychology called an interesting thing. It's called the repression of the sublime. And it means that there's something in our nature. I guess it's the elemental part of ourselves, the lunar lores part of ourselves, that pulls back, that retreats from too great an intensity of light, too great an intensity of revelation. I mean, you know, DK says, can you withstand the strain of knowing? Very interesting. He says, there's a strain to knowing, and I think your vehicles know that. So, you know, too much truth is almost too much to bear for a lot of people, and probably all of us have our comfort zone and our limits with how much truth do you really want. You say, oh, give me the whole truth, and then you'd be totally devastated. So I think that's a good one, you know, fear of truth, but can it also be that fear of the good and fear of the beautiful as well as fear of the true? I mean, I think that's something to contemplate. You say, how in the world could I be afraid of too much beauty? But people constantly cultivate ugliness in some way or other. It's like they want to stay there. And, you know, they want to be just a little bit bad so they're not entirely good. So there's this recoiling that occurs in the nature, and it is mostly a lunar part of ourselves. He says it's not just a thought question. It's a question of the very substance we have, which recoils from a greater energy. So it is something, you know, how much fear do we have and what are we afraid of and all that, you know. It's worth going into. Thank you, Carl. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah. Okay, anybody? Any further question? Or there looks like there's a question from Celeste there, Brett or BL, or am I right?
Yes. Celeste says, Carl, that reminds me of the third ray glamour that I have chosen, the glamour of secrecy and scheming.
Right, right. That's a good one. It's a good one. And, you know, if I can say, Celeste, the glamour of active scheming is a big one for the third ray, and some concealment is involved. But the seventh ray glamour of the secret and mysterious is also there, you know, and it's one of those things we'll get to it, you know. It's a lower reflection of the hermetic sealing, you know, like you seal something, S-E-A-L, hermetic sealing of one level of revelation from another. You know, you've often heard it said that people say, so what about that? Oh, no, I can't tell you. That's one of the secrets of initiation. You know, so what does a person do there? They exalt themselves at the same time as they deny you the light. But, of course, maybe we are those who need to be denied that type of light until we have proven that we can handle the light we customarily walk. Okay, thank you, Celeste. Helena, go ahead, please.
Yes. I just want to back up a little bit and give kind of an interesting, something that used to happen to me many, I would say decades ago. I was in my 20s, early 30s, mostly my early 20s. And it relates to what you said up above, where you were talking about the intuition. And in the early days, you said it's like an astral Buddhic leap. You leap from the astral to the Buddhic.
Mm.
And I remember, you know, when I was just starting out meditating and experimenting with a number of different types of meditations, I would get into, if something happened in my life that brought me into a really deep astral emotional state, really deep, or, you know, like, just despair and about life, and, I mean, just really deep. I discovered that when I went into meditation, within seconds, I would be brought into this most incredible, beautiful, lifting, Buddhic light and love and healing. And this happened frequently enough that I thought, how do I get in there? That's the question then. Well, how do you do it? And, of course, what you just said and what we all discover on the occult path eventually is that you do it through relationship with the soul, and you build and you build the antikarana through the relationship with the soul. But in those days, you know, I didn't know about that, and I thought, how do I get back into it? And I started to think, well, do I have to create a deep emotional astral experience just to re-enter these very high states of bliss in a way? And because it was so consistent, this was how I knew it would happen. It was just like the soul or angel came to me or whatever it was. Well, the soul, yeah, in those days. So yeah, so the answer is you don't want to create an astral condition in order to get into a higher state.
People work themselves up, and it does work. It does work for them.
It is.
And I think it's the mystic way, you know, and I think that we have a lot of experience on it. So, somewhere here, you know, I was looking for that thing. I'm not going to find it right now, but it has to do with intensity of feeling leading to some kind of transcendence. DTK has a beautiful way of describing it, but I'm not going to find it right now. But that's the idea behind it, the intensity of feeling sublimated really leads to something, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the thing. But now we're with DK, you know, and we're learning in addition to what we can build upon, which is sort of that, what you're talking about, we're learning the sort of conscious way of step-by-step, you know, taking the, in other words, buddhi manas, that's what we're learning. We're learning
right.
buddhi manas.
The other thing I wanted to add, intensity of feeling, further down, excuse me, you were saying, let me find that words here. I see the greatest light. And it reminded me of that text area in esoteric healing, you know, perfect poise, and the one that says a completed point of view. So where, you know, the master has a completed point of view because it's all-inclusive. You can see more. You can see far more than just the immediate environment or what is happening with another person. That master has a completed point of view. He sees all these different levels at the same time. You can see what karma may have precipitated a certain action. You can see what the soul or let's say a deeper part of the plan wants to unfold here, and this is why this is happening right now, whereas most of humanity can't see it. But the master has a much broader, wider vision view of the past and the present and the future. So I just wanted to add
that. Somehow I was thinking about that today, and I thought to myself, well, you know, well, is there ever a completed point of view? But within the ring pass knot, in which the master works, the point of view is completed relative to that ring pass knot. You know, because we have the, and that's enough, of course, that's enough to be extremely useful to those who don't have it. You know, there's one point where DK really displays some incredible humility, and he talks about the cosmic astral plane, onto the cosmic astral plane, and what lies there, who knows, I do not. You know, he says. So obviously that is beyond his particular ring pass knot, and he cannot include that type of energy, but within the energy, I would say, you know, certainly up to the energy of the monad, a master like DK can operate. And for us, that's very complete. All right, thank you. Thank you, Helena. Any other thoughts here before we go on to just a review of some fourth-ray glamours and then into our meditation? I know you may be getting a little more than you bargained for here, but it's not just the meditation, but, you know, we're making a study out of it, and I think that's really the only safe way. We have to understand what glamour is, and it's very elusive, you know. It's confusing. The lines are blurred, and we don't see clearly with objectivity what the problem is until maybe someone close to us points out, you know, have you thought why you're acting this way? And it's just how you always are. You say, this is how I am, and so I said, sorry, no, this is a glamour. So, you know, it's not easy to see. Because it's so built into us, like DK says, we've been doing this for lifetimes. It's our particular way of growing up spiritually with a little bit of distortion. So, you know, it's not easy to get rid of. Anyway, it's going to be a bit of a study for us. Okay? Right. All right, well, then why don't we just a little bit. Okay, I hear what someone wants to talk. Go ahead.
Michael, Stacia says light, yeah. Substance, soul.
Yes, you know, Stacia, hi. That substance is such an interesting word. Sometimes we equate it with matter, which it really, you know, it is and it isn't. But it also means that which is more subtle than something which is less subtle than it is. You know, like etheric, the etheric plane is substantial to the physical plane, dense physical plane. The astral plane is substantial to the etheric. The mental is substantial to the astral, and on it goes until we get such a definition of substance that the great philosopher Spinoza defined God as substance, you know, the one underlying thing. So, you know, we can look at these ideas of progression. Where he's talking about substance is mostly within the realm of the personality. There is also personality light, of course, and there is the light of the soul. This is particularly what we, at our stage of evolution, are seeking. So we can live consciously as a soul. This is one of the requirements of harmlessness. So in that case, the light is a little, you know, the light we are seeking is a little higher than the substance with which we are normally dealing in our personality. But, you know, like DK says, DK is wonderful in this way. There's always a shifting point of view, and he doesn't let you get too concrete about any one thing so that you form a fixed idea and that's it, that's it forever. He gives you a kind of a mercurial, fluid way of looking at things, so it's always relative. And that's where I think his third ray, in my view, joins the obvious second ray of his soul. Right, Stacia. Okay, thank you. Okay, anything else? Anything else? Okay, here's another hand up here. No, maybe not. Maybe not. Okay, well, let me just go on here a little bit. And what I'll do is, we've been kind of going through these glamours, and, you know, according to your personality ray or your mental ray or even your soul ray, because the personality can grab a hold of the soul energy and make it glamorous, make it distorted and so forth. This is the fourth ray. And he says that, and you know, in DK's group, Carl, I'm sorry, did you have another thing you wanted to say?
Yeah, just briefly. One of the things I have read in spiritual literature is that the question arises as to why it's the path seems to get harder instead of easier the higher we go. And the answer was that the glamours and the problems we have become more subtle, and they're harder to define and harder to dissipate because of the subtleties.
Yes, I think that's true. And of course, the old saying that the path winds upward all the way, and things get a lot more steep, and the oxygen gets thinner. So there is a way for the upward striving soul that he's put to ever greater tests and pressures with higher energies than he could contact before. So, you know, we are, you know, spiritual warriors, battle-scarred warriors walking the thorny path, and it's an achievement. So that's why it's said of a master, the rare efflorescence of a generation of inquirers. You can only imagine, you know, what does it take to be a master? And 25 years, a generation, let's say, and there's only a few that make it because of the rigors of the later parts of the path, upon which it's also possible to fall back and to fail. Let's just put it like this, you know, if a planetary logos, like our planetary logos, can go through a failure on the moon chain, and the planetary logos is a being who many, many Mahamanvantaras ago was a master, then we understand that the possibility of temporary failure is always existing for all beings along the way. And that is a kind of a sobering thought. So in other words, just we get ready for the tougher going as we go on, but at the same time we're fortified by greater energies. It's never going to be easier. As a matter of fact, for any of us, let's not imagine that it's going to be easier at any point. And, you know, when it is said by Evans Wentz or whoever he's quoting that nirvana is but the beginning of the endless way, let's just say that even when we reach that nirvanic state connected with the atmic or monadic plane, it's not going to get easier. But it's going to get more joyful and more blissful all the way, I suspect. Okay, thank you, Carl, for pointing out the inevitable. All right. All right, so anyway, here he says a few things about fourth-ray types. The majority of people in DK's group had a fourth-ray mind. You know, in other words, if you look at the tabulation, the fourth-ray mind was rather prominent, and he said it's a very important feature in my work, probably because, you know, the stimulation of the intuition via the fourth-ray mind is a good receiver for the intuition. Fourth-ray people, does that mean personalities? I don't know. Fourth-ray people are peculiarly prone to fall into glamour and thus produce a condition which is one of extreme difficulty. Now remember that humanity itself is a fourth-ray kingdom, so whether or not we think we have the fourth-ray in our nature, because we're human, most of us, aren't we, we're going to fall into these difficulties. I might define their problem by saying that they tend to bring their illusions down onto the astral plane and there clothe them with glamour and have consequently a double problem upon their hands. They are faced with the unification of glamour and illusion. We talked about Germany a little bit in this regard, a fourth-ray soul country, and you know they were the major sponsors of glamour in the Second World War. Those of us who are, you know, fourth-ray in any respect, maybe we can put ourselves to the test and see whether we, you know, what we think mentally becomes what we ardently believe in some glamorous manner, and then fight for those limited and distorted ideals. Okay, here we go with the fourth ray. They are, however, the group of souls. Notice souls. The fourth ray souls are coming in around the year 2025 in greater number. The group of souls which will eventually reveal the true nature of the intuition. And this will be the result of their illusory, glamorous fight in the world of appearances. I always thought it's amusing about the fourth ray, what he says, it can as easily produce a hero or a ne'er-do-well. A ne'er-do-well is something you never do well, you know. Everything is always complicated and you always mess it up. As much a hero as a ne'er-do-well. So, you know, it can go either way, but very rapid progress is possible to the fourth-ray type, probably because of the tremendous friction they undergo, and that might tell us something about how humanity can advance, even though there was a big mess-up on the moon chain. Okay, here's a few things he says. What is the glamour? The glamour of harmony, aiming at personal comfort and satisfaction. Well, that's pretty obvious. We're centered in our personality comes first. We use our harmonizing skills to stay within our comfort zone and fulfill our own desires. And our love of harmony does not serve a higher purpose, but just our own personal comfort. Now, the United Nations is a very fourth-ray group. There's a number of fourth-ray souls working in the UN, and their objectives, supposedly, on a world scale, are higher. Excuse me. The glamour of war. Okay. There's the thrill of combat, but it's kind of instinctual, and there is a will to prevail over others instead of seeing them as part of a greater whole. You know, I kind of make a joke here, and I say, I fight, therefore I am. You know what Descartes, he was a third-ray type, and he said, I think, therefore I am. But, you know, if you've ever been in an Irish bar, and I haven't for years and years and years, there's the tradition of a good Donnybrook, which means just the love of fighting. It doesn't make any difference who you're fighting, just as long as you can fight. So you've seen those in the movies and all that. The glamour of excuse me, the glamour of talking too fast, the glamour of conflict with the objective of imposing righteousness and peace. I want peace, but I have to fight you first. So the ends do not justify the means. So the preferred method of conflict is still indulged. Now that's considered to be the lower part of the fourth ray. And there are probably a lot better ways of reaching peace, you know, but this is let's fight first and make peace afterwards. Yeah, the love of fighting comes first. The attempt to impose righteousness and peace actually causes still more conflict. So I think Alexander the Great was a great example. So was Napoleon, and you kind of wonder whether they were the same entity. Alexander had a fourth-ray personality, no question about it, and he was a first-ray soul. And the interesting thing is he did it in a reverse manner. First, he would conquer the people, and then he would absorb them and adopt their ways and create harmony with them after the conquest. So that, you know, after he conquered Persia, he began to become very Persian and fused and blended with them for the sake of a kind of harmony over which, of course, he was the ruler. The glamour of vague artistic perception. So, you know, can you see reality clearly, factually? How do you see it? Can you work with the world realistically as it is? Or are you always in this dream world looking for beauty of some kind and cannot deal practically or really effectively in the everyday world, trying to represent hierarchy in that way? Maybe some of us will respond to these things, and I kind of responded to that one. I said, oh my God, okay. Anyway, the glamour of psychic perception instead of intuition. This is, in a way, fairly obvious. We're inclined to access the astral plane, and we get so involved with the astral plane that it actually cuts out the level of intuition, and that's too bad. But we psychism is not intuition. There are some emotional states dealing with certain kind of symbols which may reveal something on the intuitive level. But the intuitive level is actually a fairly formless level, and so many people get caught in all of the, what DK calls the phantasmagoria, you know, the ever-changing forms, and it just blots out the light of pure reason and reality. The glamour of musical perception. Now remember, there are many, many glamours, he only gives a few. It's said that in the higher worlds, as you are going for the reality, you can be led astray by beauty, musical beauty in this case, and never reach your goals. And this is the story of the sirens and the Gandharvas. You know, they have such fantastic beauty somewhere along the spiritual path that you get ensnared by them and to your doom, and you're just captivated by this constant music that's going on in your head and so forth, and it does lead to an impractical life. Of course, sometimes it leads to great revelation on the part for humanity, like Mozart or Beethoven or Bach or those particular people. Anyway, and so many fourth-ray types, they ignore the realities of life. They're in their own world of beauty, and they can't be realistic about things, but sometimes it really pays off in the case of those great revelators. There's an old story about Beethoven. Now here, you know, Beethoven really, you know, there's an example of the first ray and the fourth ray. Incredible first-ray personality, fourth-ray soul, as far as I can see. And, you know, he was so oblivious of the real world and the practical details, although it is said that he did count out exactly 60 beans of coffee every morning. And they ground them up and he had his coffee. I think Bach had a lot of coffee too. Anyway, he was meticulous in that respect, but he would wear the same clothes all the time, and he would spill food all over his manuscripts, and it is said that his friends had to steal his clothes and then leave new clothes because he would just wear them until they were falling off and probably smelled horrible. And, you know, in other words, just oblivious of those things, an isolated man in this world of beauty. But, of course, the world is so much richer for it. The glamour of the pairs of opposites in the higher sense. Well, let's get caught in a nice soul-personality conflict, you know. everybody, so many people in our field, oh, my soul is fighting with my personality, or that was my personality, this is my soul, and they're always caught in the conflict, thinking of themselves as the warrior, more than the possible resolution of the conflict. They love the fight again. And they forget that the conflict is supposed to lead to harmony, to resolution, to peace. So it's always this constant struggle between the higher impulses and the lower impulses, and the devil is sitting on your left shoulder and the angel is sitting on your right shoulder, and you're always caught in the struggle. Now that's all I'm going to say about that for the moment. There are, if you go into Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, it's not about glamour so much, but there's some other things there around page 40 and 41, which is pretty much a repetition, but, you know, it talks about how these lower qualities resolve into the greater ones, and confused combat. I love that. Sometimes, you know, the fourth ray type just has to fight and doesn't know who and what is fighting. All right. So go then to page 40 and 41 of Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, and you can read a bit more about what the fourth ray type is like before these glamours are resolved. Now I'm going to make this thing small again, and if anybody has something that you want to ask or to say, then we can do that, and then we'll get on into our meditation. There we go. That you should be able to see that pretty well. I don't know. I suppose a lot of us have fourth ray. When I look at these fourth ray glamours, I certainly recognize my other self, you know, which I hope is waning a little bit, although the people who know me might say, well, it's just not, you know. So anyway, here we have some fourth ray glamours. Any comments, any thoughts, anything you'd like to say about this?
Michael?
Yes. Fred.
Stacia asks, how do we remain energy continent during this steep climb? Continent of energy, that is.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I think it's alignment, isn't it? You know, I mean, of course, everybody has to find out for themselves, right? That, you know, all the questions we ask, you remember a master, the rare efflorescence of a generation of inquirers. So we all have to inquire the way, that's in white magic, and we eventually answer all these questions for ourselves in our own way. But I would say that so many of us, we fall out of alignment. And the alignment is what keeps us in touch with the higher worlds, and we kind of lose it. You know, we just descend down into emotional reactivity or some kind of mental criticism, whatever, and we lose the contact which we should be holding at a point of tension. With will, focused, immovable will is the definition of a point of tension. So I would say, let the practice be sustaining the alignment. And it's so easy to lose it, because you get triggered. You know, something sets you off. You know, suddenly you're saying things you wish you didn't say, and it's all built into the habit nature. But if the mind, at a point of tension, can be sustaining the alignment, then we can be energy continent, and we won't throw, as DK says, we won't throw our points of tension all over the personality and be only maybe 60% effective. We have to gather up all these little points of tension into one point of tension that's mostly on this mental plane, illumined by the soul, and hold it, the power to hold. Big thing, I deviate all the time, maybe you do too, and I say, oh, why did I do that? And then you regather yourself, and you hold that point of tension, and at the same time, you don't disperse your energy all over the place and make a waste of it. So you are continent in that respect. And the astral body doesn't have its outbursts and all the rest of it, you know. Anyway, that's my thought about it, temporarily. Okay, anything else? Thank you, Stacey.
Yes. Rebecca asks, I fight, therefore I am. That's my family's pattern.
I love it. I love that. Yeah, I fight, therefore I am. You know, it's what makes you feel alive. You know, obviously for Descartes it was thinking, and maybe the second reason, I love, therefore I am, you know, or I dominate, and therefore I am. You can understand applying the sense of being alertness to a particular activity. In other words, this type of activity defines my sense of being me, and I feel more like I am who I am when I'm doing this thing. And of course, it's half a joke, I fight, therefore I am, but some of us know what that's all about. We feel, what we say, more alive when we're fighting, you know, or more alive when we're doing something else. Seventh rate type, I put things in order, and therefore I am. You know, who wants their life organized by a seventh rate type? Well, maybe a lot of us need it, you know. Okay, that's the family pattern, and then one has to step out of it and find another way, and then they go into I harmonize, and therefore I am, you know. But you have to be careful with that one, too, because then you become a self-centered center of harmony, of harmonization, you know. Here, let me harmonize the situation for you. Okay, any other questions here, Brett? I see a few or a couple.
That's all we've got now.
What does Rebecca have here? Did she have something? Was that from earlier?
That was just now. I fight, therefore I am.
Oh, there we go. Okay. All right, light substance. Okay, there we go. All right, friends. Well, then, if there's nothing else here, I know I'm doing a lot of talking here, and maybe a little bit fast, you know, sorry, kind of third-ray physical nature. They say rapid speech and rapid action. Well, at my age, I certainly have rapid speech. Rapid action is another question. So maybe we will go on to our meditation. Okay, if that's okay with you. Okay, I'm looking for... Okay, good. All right. So, now the thing about the meditation, I'm just going to pretty well start out with the technique or formula like I did last time, you know, with the preparation stage, you know, we know what glamour we're working with, and we're going to cooperate with the soul, and, you know, you can go through these things yourself when you are doing it yourself, but time is running. And this is supposed to be a meditation which can also be done relatively rapidly. Once we get the sequence of it, we're learning how to focus three types of light, and we are more or less prepared. So that's what we'll do. Just we will pause for a moment. And we will realize that we want to bring together three types of light or vibration, bring them together onto the mental plane. We want to raise the powers of the etheric, physical, and astral bodies into the mind by the power of the creative imagination. And there, as if breathing them up, we fuse them with the light of the mind, the thinking power, and the vitality of the lower vehicles. And then as if the light of the soul that we can visualize, you know, the light that we have at least within our causal body, egoic lotus, we kind of bring that down through the power of the creative imagination. And it's as if three lights are fused. We want to kind of feel that. Some people may have some sensation when that happens, or they may simply get the sense of three levels of vibration, three levels of light coming together with the obvious stronger one being the light of the soul, guiding the whole process. And we sort of see that happening as if on the plane of mind, however we want to visualize that. Every plane is right here, really, so even if you're within your head, you can be on the plane of mind, or on any plane, for that matter. And it's as if the soul is sounding the Om, the light and power of the soul. It's breathing forth the Om into the mind and the personality which is attentive and waiting. So we just kind of imagine that, a silent Om from the soul coming down into the mind. In relation to the positive personality, each in his own way, we do this. It's as if somehow the soul is empowering this point of light on the mental plane, giving it something extra. And thus strengthening the instrument we're going to use to penetrate the glamour we may be working with. Remember that even though it's individual work, whatever you do out there on the astral plane has an effect in the consciousness of humanity. So an intense light is sensed, it's fed by the Om. DK suggests we think of it as a searchlight of great brilliance. It's vivid, brilliant, but it's not yet in the active phase of projecting. It will stay with the vividness of that light, strengthened by the power of the soul. There is, you know, kind of a magnetic area around the pineal gland, etherically, and it's going to relate to the Ajna Center, too. So sometimes that searchlight can be visualized as if in the center of the head and going to go out through the Ajna Center. Now, assuming we have quite a vivid visualization there, we're going to focus all the will we have behind the light. And this will is helping to create a fusion of the three lights. This is the mind held steady in the light. Remember? Point of attention, focused, immovable will. So the will is added to the light. Right now we're strengthening the instrument we're going to use. Now we're going to bring the searchlight of the mind and the glamour to be dissipated. We're going to bring them together brought into relationship, says DK, by the power of thought. The glamour and its quality, and the searchlight and its power, are recognized to be as they are. And the effect or effects to be brought about by that relationship are carefully thought out. What are we trying to do here? With the glamour out there on the astral plane and out there in there, and the searchlight that we are empowering. What are we trying to do? We don't want to strengthen the glamour. But when we think about it, we realize that the glamour has to be weakened and eventually dissipated. So much depends upon how we think about this. So, now, you know, when you do it yourself, you can take as long or as short as you need. But we have now, let us say, achieved the needed concentration, realization of the process, and relationship between these two areas, the searchlight and the glamour. And then using the will and the creative imagination, we now turn on the searchlight, and we see a vivid beam of light stream forth and pierce the glamour, visualizing a broad and brilliant beam pouring forth from the illumined mind onto the astral plane. We don't doubt this. We believe it is so. Now, an important aspect of the work. We name the glamour with these mantric sentences, and we see the glamour in process of dissipation. We sustain our point of tension, our beam of penetrating, piercing light, piercing the glamour. And in whatever way we can, we try to make real to our understanding and inactivity the meaning of these mantric phrases. The power of the light prevents the appearance of the glamour of, and we name it. Say this to yourself. Power of the light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting me. Power of the light destroys the life behind the glamour. Of course, memorize these so you can use them spontaneously. So using these mantras, sentences, it's an affirmation of power and of purpose. And as we sound these sentences, we hold our point of tension, the mind held in steadiness in the light of the soul, positive orientation, you will know when you achieve it. So now the sacred word will be sounded, producing an active penetration, and then we're going to see three things happen. The beam of light has made a definite impact upon the glamour. The glamour is penetrated, and the beam of light on the Om is absorbed by that glamour, and it is weakened. And the glamour is slowly dissipating, weakening, eventually to disappear. If the clouds are gone and the spiritual sun is shining through. Now we consciously, purposefully withdraw our beam of penetrating, dissipating light back to the mental plane. We reorient ourselves upon the mental plane. And that effective instrument is there. It can be generated by our creative imagination, by our will, and can be used as necessary when necessary. Now we're doing it together, but obviously you see how in a few short stages you can generate the instrument through the creative imagination and the will, and use it effectively, and then withdraw it to the mental plane. We'll sound one ohm to complete the process. Okay, friends, that's it for the moment. Now, I believe there may be two more of these. Just wanted to experiment. You know, next week is AM, then the week after that is PM. You can use the same link. It should be sent to you. And then, you know, then if this works and it does look like it's working, I'll put on another X number of programs that will all, again, use the same link. And we will continue our study of glamour and our use of the individual formula. And at a certain point, we'll get into the world glamour. Don't want to do that prematurely, but our autumn is going to be important. Maybe we can help as long as we continue to use the individual glamour formulas. Have to do two things at the same time. Okay, are there any questions or comments here?
Comment.
Okay.
Rebecca says, I had an image of St. George and the dragon piercing the glamour.
That's a good one. Somehow it's a very scorpionic image. And, Scorpio is particularly the sign that leads to the second initiation and in which the biggest battle with glamour is undertaken. On all three levels, you know, Scorpio operates at the first, second, and third initiations, and you have the physical, emotional, and mental heads of the Hydra. So we all have our dragon, and we have to defeat the lower dragon in order for us to turn into a dragon of wisdom. Another name for a master is a dragon of wisdom, a lesser dragon of wisdom. And actually each of the planetary logoi are called dragons of wisdom. So the dragon is good, the dragon is bad, the lower dragon has to be defeated for the greater dragon to come into power. I think it's a good image. Okay. Thank you, Rebecca. Anything else?
And Stacia says, wow.
Well, Tibetan has given us some good formulas, you know, here. And we just have to learn how to use them with a degree of consistency over time, a degree of efficiency. And we just, you know, we'll just come to see ourselves better, and we will learn what is holding us back in the realm of Kama Manas. That's where our greatest battle really is. It's sort of an aspect of mind and emotion joined. We have to kind of separate the two out. So we have, in fact, Manas and Kama, and we can use either one distinctly. So the Tibetan formulas are good. Okay, thanks, Stacia. Anything else?
And Celeste says, thank you so much to everyone who is contributing to this service happening.
Thank you, Celeste, and thank you, everyone. And I want to thank my colleagues, Olivia and Tuya particularly, being behind this effort. You know, in various places, people do these things, and it all contributes to one large attack on the glamour issue. Maybe, you know, in another few hundred years, when Vulcan is discovered and more clarity comes to the mind of man, it's going to be a worldwide attack on the glamorous issues. Right now, we're making a start. Okay. Anything else? Okay. So if not, what I'll do then is, you know, we'll just end with this particular mantra. New group of world servers, mantra here. And we'll use the we. So, you know, I can be used in a very, very inclusive sense, but let's keep the group consciousness about this, and we'll do this om on either side, and then we'll get this up for you on Makara, and you can feel free to give people the link so that they can participate in what we're doing. There's no limit for this. Right now we're doing this in webinars, you know. Sometimes we might do this in broadcast. You know how Tuya and I have been doing it here. Wednesday night, triangles. Thursday night, reappearance of the Christ. Friday night, or maybe I should say morning or night, the glamour work. Then Saturday, invoking the souls of nations. And on Sunday, the invocation of money for hierarchical purposes. Those five meditations, in terms of the process that we've been told to indulge in, ask and you shall receive, seek and you shall find, knock and it shall be opened to you. So we're doing that. We call it the Ask Project, and there'll be other things that we may bring into that. Excuse me. So let's do this together. And may the power of the one life pour through the group of all true servers. May the love of the one soul characterize the lives of all who seek to aid the great ones. May we fulfill our part in the one work through self-forgetfulness, harmlessness, and right speech. Okay, friends, we will persist with this, doing our best every week to meet with you. And, you know, if for some reason due to travels or some other thing we cannot do it, we'll let you know hopefully in time. And I think, you know, as the weeks and months and even years elapse, the dissipation of the glamours which may be troubling us, holding us, will proceed and will also have an effect in the world, in the consciousness of humanity. So meanwhile, thank you for your attendance, and see you next week, and thank you very much for showing up. Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.